welcome back to the Middling Along podcast. I'm your host, Emma Thomas, and joining me today is Emerald May, who is an international embodied sex, intimacy and breathwork coach. Her passion and mission is to support women and parents to live a more authentic, connected and pleasure-filled life whilst raising the next generation. She serves as a board member for the Association of Certified Sexological Body Workers and is devoted to the promotion, support, development and accountability of the profession of certified sexological bodywork and somatic sex education. Oh, that's a bit of a mouthful. She's currently training with Schoolbree to become a breathwork coach for children as well. So welcome along to the podcast, Emerald.
Thank you so much for having me, Emma. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's lovely to have you, especially lovely because Emerald and I have worked together in a professional capacity as, I don't know, what would you do? I'm a client, past client.
That's right.
Of yours. And we'll maybe talk a little bit about that at some point during the conversation. But to kick us off, can you explain for anyone who's sitting here feeling curious what an intimacy coach actually does and what that sort of process of working with someone like you is like?
Yeah, thanks for that great question. I think people can get a misunderstanding of perhaps what is an intimacy coach? What do I do? And I've tried to move it into a few words, which is I support people to have a somatic or embodied sex education that is unique for them. And there is no one size fits all with my process. There's no five steps or positions or tricks that you follow for orgasmic bliss and deep connection. It's more about a nuance and sensitivity to the individuals and what they're coming to the work for. So what their intention is for doing the work, whether they're coming as an individual or coming as a couple. And we co-create the work together to work with and through the body. So we can use games and exercises, body work, personal inquiry, with the intention really to increase self-knowledge and awareness using a bottom-up or from the body and a top-down process, so from the mind as well. We can look at physiology, anatomy, religion, societal and cultural conditioning, early experiences of sexuality, and then we move on to the more embodied pieces around creating safety in the body, cultivating presence and becoming embodied through breath, sound and movement. And moving through past experiences, so maybe that also looks like completing trauma responses in the body. And we also can explore cultivating environments for pleasure, communication, pleasure mapping, de-armoring. The list goes on, really. It's a really broad modality that really works with the individual. So we co-create something together. It is client-led and trauma-informed as well. So really being aware of people's past experiences and where they are in their bodies in this moment in time. Yeah. Does that give you more of an idea about what it might be like or what we could cover?
Yeah, I mean, as you say, it's everyone is coming at this with an entirely different past life, to make it not sound too kind of weird, but past kind of relationship life, whether they've been with a partner for a long time or a short time, whether they've had lots of other different partners, or whether they've spent most of their life with one person. And I think I certainly had some very, very wrong preconceptions of what this kind of work would be like, that I was kind of quite, that really almost put me off from kind of agreeing to do it in the first place. I think I was very much like, oh, I'm going to have to, roll around naked on camera with a complete stranger who's hundreds of thousands of miles away. And it very much wasn't that. But yeah, so that's interesting, actually, that you you do work with individuals as well as with couples. Is there a sort of a kind of a split in terms of how much of your work is with individuals and how much is with couples?
I would say that it's probably about 50-50, actually, in terms of when I work with couples and when I work with individuals. My favourite people to work with are parents, actually, people who are trying to raise the next generation in connection with their partners. And obviously the nuance and the challenge that brings on many levels to the relationship, not just in sex and intimacy, is enormous. And obviously we can't cover everything, but I believe that if we live a more connected and authentic and pleasure-filled life in the home, then that can infiltrate into our children and then into our wider communities and friendships and things like that. So I love working with couples, and I love working with individuals too. Yeah, the curiosity and the willingness to is the key, really, and something that you brought. There might have been a little bit of resistance.
I think there was quite a lot of resistance. I think that's fair.
Well, sometimes the unknown can be scary. And yeah, I think one of the key pieces of this work is finding safety. Like, how can an individual find safety in their own body and then bring somebody else's nervous system involved into the relationship, your partner or a lover or a friend, and then maintain that sense of safety whilst in connection with somebody else? And so, yeah, that's where we always begin, really, is cultivating a sense of safety and trust within yourself and then with myself as the practitioner, and then, if appropriate, with partners.
And I think that's, I mean, I learned so much over the course of working with you. I think it's just very telling how little, and in many cases practically zero, we get this kind of teaching or kind of have this kind of learning in our lives. And you think it's such a big part of your life being in a relationship with somebody, and yet you know, for the vast majority of us, we get no training whatsoever as in kind of how to make that successful.
It's so true. I mean, it's not just that we don't get training on how to make it successful. We almost get training on how not to make it successful. Like, are we even taught that we're allowed to have fears or desires or boundaries? And are we taught to be honest with ourselves or even listen to what our body wants? And are we allowed to express our emotions, particularly those socialized as women and brought up as women and girls? You know, if we got angry, it's a terrible thing to happen if a woman gets angry. But if they're too sexual, you know, as Barbie talks about, then that's also criticized. So it's like, well, how can we stay in our center and be true to who we are and be in partnership with somebody else when society and religion and the culture around us is so conflicted? Because we're sort of over-sexualized, but then the focus is on a different part of sexuality than actually what's happening inside the body.
Yeah. And there's so many kind of roles that we have to play that society kind of maps out for us, from kind of, you know, the good girl, the good daughter, and then we're mothers. And so we can't, you know, again, we have to be sort of present in a certain way. Yeah. You meet someone, are you always completely upfront and honest with them about what's happened in your past? Probably not.
Right.
Because you want to present the best sort of possible version of you when you're getting to know somebody. And then however many years down the line, it's too late. People might feel it's too late to kind of open up and have those kind of difficult conversations if things are difficult for them.
Yeah, well, I think you've touched on something really significant here. If we sort of use the example of a couple who've been in relationship for a period of time, and sometimes it can feel overwhelming if you're in patterns of disconnect, or there's a mismatch of desire, or perhaps you just haven't been honest with the way that your partner touches you, and actually you've never really enjoyed the way that you get to the intimacy. And that might feel so overwhelming to even begin to have those conversations. So I think something that we worked on is developing a language around communication, around expressing desires, and being honest whilst caring and supportive for yourself and the other person as well. So I think there's also a fear of upsetting people, upsetting somebody if you've been holding some information that you haven't felt you had the skills to share with somebody. And emotions do come up around things like that. And it's like, how can we develop skills and tools to manage our emotions and share our truth and take that next step in vulnerability to get closer to our partners and closer to our truest expression of ourselves as well?
And you mentioned sort of working with parents, and obviously if our kind of children are small, if we have them, they're very demanding, they get a bit bigger, they're still demanding, and then they're still awake at 9:30, 10 o'clock at night. Yes. It's like navigating all of those different kind of shifting sands around what's kind of going on in a household of more than just you as a couple, and also just falling into that sort of very transactional relationships of, like, you know, did you get the bin liners, did you get the milk, whose turn is it to pick the children up tomorrow, kind of comparing own diaries. Oh, should we just kind of schedule in some time to actually spend together and remember that we still like each other?
Oh, I think you're talking to many people, Emma, including myself, actually. I'm a mum of two kids. I have a 17-year-old and a 13-year-old. And yeah, it's so hard. It is so tough to be raising a family and staying in connection. And through my lived experience of having a challenging marriage and getting a divorce that was quite acrimonious, to then moving into beloved partnership with a new partner and being able to sustain a friendship with my ex-husband, has been a really significant part of my journey with supporting individuals and couples on this journey as well. And I think what you highlighted as well is, like, sex and intimacy doesn't happen in a vacuum. Like, it's not like when you first start dating and you have this huge, you might have a huge arousal and desire and like want to spend all your time with the other person, you know,
and life be able to spend all your time with them.
Right, exactly. even if you wanted to, it's not possible. And I think that's the environment is integral to creating and cultivating intimacy as we get older and have more responsibilities, especially in a busy family. And so it is a shared responsibility to co-create that time together. That's something that feels really significant. And also getting clear on your values as well as a couple, that feels really important too. So as an individual, you have your own values around what you'd like your intimacy and sex life to be like. And then you also have relationship values as well. So where are you aligning in your values individually, and where do you want to co-create something new and different for the relationship as a whole? What are you willing to try and get curious with? But yeah, it's really important to remember that sex doesn't happen in a vacuum. It's like, yeah, we have to create the time. And that might feel overwhelming in itself, actually. Like, we don't have any time left, you know, every hour of every day is full.
It's all accounted for.
Yeah. So even creating 20 minutes a week, if that's where you're at, just come into the place of acceptance of like, oh, okay, this is where we're at. And maybe our value is that we want to create more time. And then we sort of have to share some responsibilities perhaps and renegotiate some of the chores in the house, or who's picking up what child from what club, et cetera, et cetera. Just to sort of spread the cognitive load a little bit fairer, perhaps.
And you mentioned about your own change in a long-term relationship. And obviously for a lot of people reaching a sort of midlife, midpoint, I don't know what the stats are, is it one in every two marriages or relationships breaking down, people getting divorced? It's people then moving into potentially either dating, which presumably is completely, I can't even imagine doing it now compared to whenever, or entering into building a new long-term relationship. Is that something that you often work with people who are sort of rediscovering themselves after coming out of a long-term relationship?
Yeah, I absolutely do, actually. I had a client who hadn't been in a relationship, romantic or sexual, for 20 years after her divorce and came to work with me. She also had some relational trauma. And so we started really back at the beginning of, again, that sense of safety, finding safety in the body, knowing that it's her own body that she has autonomy and choice over how it feels sometimes, not always, obviously, but that is safe to feel pleasure again. And it can be a really exciting time for people, especially if you've come out of a dissatisfying marriage. And it also can feel quite overwhelming as well. And perhaps, as you say, like, dating looks completely different to how it did when you were last on a date.
Slightly terrifying.
Right? Yeah. Like, how do you navigate that? And I would recommend for folks to really begin with yourself, like, get to know yourself first. Again, going back to this piece around, you know, learning that you are allowed to have these needs, these desires, these boundaries without fear of being rendered a slut or frigid or whatever it may be on that scale. And I think reminding folks that all relationships take work, including the relationship you have with yourself. And so getting clear on what you want and what you need and learning how to communicate that, and learning how to receive other people's yeses and nos as well, feels like a really significant part of the journey. And yeah, I have lots of frameworks that I use with individuals and with people in relationships to really cultivate that sense of safety and communication. So talking about your turn-ons, your avoids, your safety, your relationship intentions and expectations, and your sexual health and STI status. There's a really great framework called The Stars Talk by Dr. Evelyn Dacher, and her website is maketimeforthetalk.com. And it's really a handy tool to have in your toolbox to be able to communicate on a date with somebody. You know, and you can really ask these questions in a really creative and curious way. It doesn't necessarily need to be like a checklist. So tell me.
Clipboard. This won't take long.
You could do it that way if you were into that kind of dynamic. That could be quite fun as long as it's consensual, right? You've got to make sure that consent is involved. But yeah, there's ways of integrating these questions and these conversations in a more natural progression rather than a linear way. So yeah, also building community. You know, if you're a person who's come out of a long-term relationship or just you're newly single, sort of building a sense of community with folks, finding practice partners to practice some of the games or the body work that I teach and I support people with can be a really safer way to navigate learning about your body again without having to get into a deep emotionally involved relationship. So just being very clear about the container that you're creating with the other person obviously is something that's really important and I can support people with. But that can be really fun as well. So like the work that I do, I feel like I'm talking quite seriously, but like it's supposed to be fun, right? And pleasure, learning your own pleasure can be a really fun experience. So yeah, I definitely work with people who are not in relationship and either want to or don't want to, you know, because you don't need to be in relationship to feel pleasure or sexual satisfaction. Like you can have that yourself as well. So.
And can you give us maybe a couple of different examples of some of the, either you mentioned games or sort of different tools, techniques to kind of get a sort of flavor of some of the things that somebody might do in a session with you? And do you see people in person as well as online or?
Yeah, great question. Thanks for asking. I was hoping to be able to share some of the fun games that we play or can play. Yeah, I absolutely see people in person in Portland, Oregon, where I live now, and I see people across the world online. Obviously, what we can do online versus what we can do in person is sometimes significantly different. Sometimes we can adapt tools and games so people can play them online rather than in person. So one of my most favorite models to work with or games to play is based on The Wheel of Consent by Dr. Betty Martin. And this model of touch really supports us to learn to trust, value, voice our desires for touch. And there are four quadrants, the give, the receive, the take, and the allow quadrant. And what that gives us the opportunity to do is to really explore the elements of touch. And are we touching somebody for our pleasure or are you touching somebody for the other person? So the question, who is it for, comes up quite often in the work that we do. And really breaking down the type of touch that we're doing can really increase the amount of presence that people are feeling and then they can be more present with their sensations, which in turn can support them to know what it is that they like. Because oftentimes, we don't really know even what we like anymore. Perhaps our bodies have changed. Perhaps our hormones are changing. And
well, we don't think necessarily about touch in that way, do we? Unless that's something that presumably we've been kind of taught to do again.
That's right. So yeah, so really breaking it down to basic elements and slowing way down to... So what a game we would play would be the 3-minute game. And the 3-minute game, you ask the question, you create a container for 3 minutes and you ask the question, how would you like to be touched for 3 minutes? And for folks who perhaps have a history of trauma or abuse or challenges in their past relationships, the container is 3 minutes. And so that can really support people to come back into a sense of safety and trust in a titrated way. And so you ask the person, how would you like to be touched for 3 minutes? You can also restrict it to the tip of the finger, to the tip of the elbow to start with as well. So you know that that's the boundary, the physical boundary that you're going to be touched. And you can choose, how would you like to be touched? So that happens. The person who's received the touch says thank you. The person who's given the touch says you're welcome. And then you swap over and you say, how would you like to touch me for 3 minutes from the tip of the fingers to the tip of the elbow? And so that gives the person who is doing the touch to do the touch for their own pleasure. And you can play this game online if you're a couple, and you can play it in person as well. If you're an individual, you can play it online by touching yourself for the pleasure of one hand, the receiving hand, or touching for the pleasure of the giving hand. That's sort of really breaking it down super, super to the really granular level. But ultimately, it gives you an opportunity to really embody your desire. So if you want, so I'm sure we could all use the example of when somebody's offered to give you a massage, and then the next thing you know, you're having sex, and you're like, what? What? I thought we were having a massage. And one of my teachers calls this desire smuggling. And so what Betty Martin does is break it down to be like, oh, I'm going to own my desire. I'm going to say like, hey, I really want to give you a massage, and I really want to then see if you're open to having sex afterwards, rather than going in through it the smuggling way, which is like, oh, I'm just going to start giving you a nice massage. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, so playing the 3 minute game is a really great way to build connection. We also work with boundaries as well. So working with the yes, no, maybe game. So that would be when one partner, this can also really support somebody who finds it difficult to communicate or even know what it is that they like. Sometimes we can get into a pattern of not really knowing if we're enjoying the touch that we like until it's got over that edge of like, oh yeah, no, I really don't like this. Or, oh yeah, I really like this. So it, again, we're slowing way down. One of the people can touch the other person, and the other person every few seconds gives a yes, a no, or a maybe. So if they get a yes, if the giver gets a yes, then they continue that, or they can explore something else. If they get a no, they say thank you. So you're acknowledging the other person's boundary, and then you move on to something else. And if you get a maybe, that's where it gets quite juicy. You can get really curious, like, oh, so it's a maybe. So what if I do it harder or softer or slower or faster? And that brings that presence back to the giver and to the receiver as well. So cultivating that sense of presence. So that's another fun game that we can play.
And the way that you're describing that as well, like that touch doesn't have to be, wouldn't necessarily start out as being kind of very intimate, kind of sexual touch. It can, like you say, it can be the back of somebody's hand or their neck or their, it's not that you just kind of launch in there and
no that's right out. I mean it, no, absolutely not. And I think so what we find often, what I often find with clients, is that we're quite habituated to touching areas of the body that we know get a response from folks, and so other areas of the body can become desensitized. And so what this can really offer is building your capacity for pleasure. And so absolutely starting with the hands can be such an erotic and arousing and intimate experience, and it's not overtly sexualized, right? And actually bringing those touch receptors, like bringing them online by doing practices like waking the hands, which is another game from the Wheel of Consent, which really builds awareness in the touch receptors in the palms of the hands and the fingers, really slows down the touch, can really increase the capacity to give and receive pleasure. And so we're rewiring the neural circuits in the brain to receive pleasure, build capacity to receive pleasure, and ultimately experience more pleasure.
It's almost like you're sort of, by slowing down and making those movements smaller and so much more subtle, is almost like you have to pay more attention, and therefore you're kind of more alive to what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, building that capacity for presence to give and receive is one of the key foundations of the work that I that I do with folks. Yeah.
We talked a little bit about longer term relationships and kind of having, you know, maybe gotten into a bit of a rut, whether that's kind of in terms of communication or kind of intimacy. What are the ways that you've approached that, sort of breaking down that the blah of of kind of those entrenched patterns and responses? And yeah,
great question. Yay. So as I mentioned before, a sense of curiosity and willingness is key. So if both parties are willing to make an effort and to work on their intimate relationship, say that we're working with people in partnership, that's key. So looking at the shared responsibilities and the piece again around sex not happening or intimacy not happening in a vacuum, checking in with the environment and getting vulnerable and truthful with each other. So as again, we talked about communication and active listening. There's an activity called listening pairs where one of the parties will set a timer again. You might notice some themes coming through now. They set a timer for about 5 minutes and one person can just share from their heart really what's going on with their day, with their feelings about intimacy in the relationship, with a work colleague. I mean, it doesn't really matter on the context at the beginning. It's really to build a sense of like, oh, I'm being seen and I'm being heard by my partner. The partner who's listening is engaging in active listening. So that might look like eye contact. It might look like the occasional nod. We're not responding. We're not going to
jump in there,
answer back or jump in or interrupt or anything like that. Yeah. We're really being present with what's being shared. And that process of just simply being heard can actually open the doorway to a lot more vulnerability and creating that sense of safety. Like, oh, I'm enough. Like my thoughts are enough. What's happening for me is enough. I'm not too much or I'm not enough, you know? So that's a really key piece. And then there has to be the commitment, right? There has to be a commitment to the relationship and a shift in what's been happening before. So I talked a lot about creating time. So there is this sort of idea that we can have this spontaneous and juicy connection with our partners and they know what we want and we know what they want. And it just is always explosively delicious. And we both have an orgasm at the same time and da-da-da-da at the end. And that's just
all
not real.
Ever after.
Yeah, right. I mean, it's just like, come on, like, let's get real here. That is not real life. It's certainly not my real life anyway. Maybe for some people that's what happens. But I know for me, my body's changing, my life responsibilities are changing. And so scheduling intimacy is something that I really prioritize in my relationship. It might feel a little bit weird and forced at first, but soon it can create a sense of anticipation and you'll end up looking forward to spending that quality time together. And even as I said before, like even if it's just 20 minutes in your week, then being okay with that and like that's all we've got right now. And if that's our intention to increase that, great. And then the next piece is like, what do you need? So really getting into the curiosity of what do you need and what do you want in your intimate life? So writing an I want list is something that can be really quite vulnerable. And then sharing that with your partner and hearing what their desires are. I mean, it doesn't necessarily mean that your desires are going to get met. So that's important to caveat. But just to have the opportunity to express your desire in a non-judgmental way with your partner in active listening can be really powerful as well. Mm. And then considering how do you transition into that time? So you've scheduled this time. But up until the moment before that time, child might be screaming or you might have just got home from work or perhaps you've just come from the office because a lot of people are working from home now. And so they're kind of saturated with being at home and being in each other's spaces a lot of the time. So what do you need to transition into that different mindset? Like, okay, so now it's time for intimacy and pleasure. What do I need to be able to do that?
Yeah.
Pardon?
Got to switch gear.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And that's where creating a ritual can really help. So you're orienting the mind and the body to focus on like what's happening next. And when I say ritual, that can mean like lighting a candle. It can mean taking some breaths together. It can mean creating an energetic bubble. I mean, it might even mean having a glass of orange juice and I don't know. It could be anything. The point is that it's a repetition and it's a significant.
It's a signal for your
signal
kind of
to the brain and the body. Imagery. Yeah.
Yeah.
That you're transitioning into that sacred time together.
We do. We still make a bubble. You'll be glad to
you
know.
Do.
Yeah.
Oh, that makes me so happy. And what? Yeah. Tell me, like, what's it like? What is that like creating a bubble with your partner? What is a bubble? Maybe you can share a little bit that way around.
It's that kind of, you know, that sort of physical thing of kind of almost like this is our space. But also I think, like you say, it's that kind of trigger of, oh yeah, this is the thing that we do when it's Wednesday night and we commit to whatever, spending that time talking about us. So let's do that as a, like you say, a kind of a shift in gear to, I don't know. I still sometimes kind of think, oh gosh, are we really still doing that? But actually, yeah, it is good. It is good.
I love that. Thanks for sharing that, Emma. Yeah. I think something else that you've reminded me of talking about that is it being a space to be together and to let go of expectations as well, and creating an intention. Like, it doesn't necessarily, sex, intimacy doesn't necessarily need to lead to penetration or orgasm, right? I think what I try and encourage my clients to think about is, how do they want to feel during and after the experience of connection together? Is it a sense of release? Is it feeling desired or feeling powerful or feeling surrendered or feeling juicy or whatever it is? And using that as the intention and be in the moment of what is co-created with you, not being in the past of what it used to be like or what it could be like in the future, but actually really coming back to that consensual present moment. Yeah, that also feels really important for cultivating intimacy in long-term relationships as well. Oh, I just thought of one more thing. Emily Nagoski has just released a new book called Come Together, and I was really lucky to go to Powell's bookstore, which is an incredible bookstore in Portland. It's like the largest independent bookstore in North America, I think, and I'm just super lucky for it to be like 15-minute drive from my house. And Emily came a couple of weeks ago and did a book reading and a book signing. So yeah, it was so amazing.
It's on my list.
Emma, you have to read it. It's so good. So Emily Nagoski is the person who also wrote Come As You Are, and talks about spontaneous versus responsive desire. And my main takeaway from Come Together is pleasure is the measure. And so it's not the frequency of intimacy or sex that you're having. It's more about how much pleasure and how enjoyable the intimacy and sex that you're having is. And that's the same with Cindy Darnell, who wrote Sex When You Don't Feel Like It, which is another book that I really appreciate. And that's really like, you desire sex that's actually meaningful, perhaps, or it feels good in the body and you're having your needs met. And that has to come from yourself, of like knowing what your needs are. So yeah, those are two book recommendations I would strongly recommend for folks who want to explore what intimacy and long-term partnerships can look like.
And if anybody wanted to kind of explore any of that with you, how would, you know, what would that look like? Yeah, what does that time frame of working with you typically involve?
Thanks for asking. Yeah. It would be an honour to support individuals and couples to live a more authentic, embodied and in pleasure-filled life. And you can check out my website, which is rootedpleasure.com. Sign up for my newsletter, and that has a link to book a free Disconnected to Deeply Loving strategy call. And that really is the foundational piece of how we begin work together. And I normally work with couples for at least 6 to 8 sessions initially, and then we sort of check in to see if they want to continue working together. Because I think the most important thing, well, one of the most important things to note is that this work takes commitment, it takes time. And if we've been learning a pattern of how to interact with our bodies, ourselves, our pleasure, our intimacy, our whole lives, to think that it's going to shift and change in 1 or 2 sessions is naive, to say the
very
least.
Very optimistic.
And optimistic, yeah. Yeah, that's the other way of looking at it, isn't it? So yeah, I say 6 to 8 sessions minimally, and then we can go from there and see what needs are still there.
Fantastic. Well, that seems to be a good place to wrap up. I'll put the link to your website in the show notes as well. And I'll dig out some links to the books that you've suggested, and anything else that you want to send over to me, I can add on there. If people want to start having a bit of a research, if they're interested in exploring that side of their relationship, or indeed exploring things themselves as an individual. Thank you so much. It's lovely to see you.
Yeah, you're so welcome, Emma. Thank you so much for inviting me on. It's my first podcast, and it's a really exciting topic to be talking about. I love my work. I'm super lucky to be able to do something that I just love and adore, and I love supporting people to live their fullest expression and in connection with their partners and themselves. So yeah, thank you.
And I meant to say, and I totally forgot until now, but I was going to say, so I'll say it now anyway. But I think the two most important things that we did to invest in our relationship were, one, working with you. And the other one was doing the marriage course before we got married, which was something else I was very skeptical about, because I think it was it's kind of comes out of the church. So it's, but it's not kind of overtly religious. And I know hundreds or thousands of people have done that same course as well. And that taught us quite a lot about communicating with one another, but not on the kind of on the intimacy side. So I'm always very, very grateful for the work that we did with you.
Thank you, Emma. Yeah, I'm really touched to hear that, and I'm so glad that the work has been integrated and it continues to support you in your relationship a few years later. So yay.
Yeah, we're not perfect though, just in case anyone's wondering.
Perfect. Hate to break it, like all relationships take work constantly.
Lovely to see you. Thanks so much, Emerald, for your time.
You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Middling Along podcast. Do remember to subscribe to be notified when our next episode is live. And why not visit the blog at www.middlingalong.com to sign up to my newsletter as well. I do hope you enjoyed listening today. If you did, I'd be really grateful if you would consider leaving a short review, as that helps people find the podcast and helps get it noticed. Hope you can join us next time. Goodbye for now.